special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
What's going on? This is the February 2nd episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. I am your host, James Bell, lead boxing analyst for the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and the leader of the Boxing Source on social media. You can follow us on Instagram at The Boxing Source. You can also follow the YouTube channel. Just look up The Boxing Source. We are also on Facebook. Search The Boxing Source and follow on Twitter at Boxing Source 2. Number to dial in is 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. Going to, go through the action that happened on Thursday night, and then also the main event that was in Mississippi on Saturday. As we, had your Dennis Ugas in action. Your Dennis Ugas, who was a contender for the WBC welterweight championship, he went up against Mike Dallas Jr. Over in Biloxi. But I do want to go through most of the fight card that was in Miami. That was on Thursday. You had the WBO middleweight champion Demetrius Andrade put his belt on the line against Luke Keeler. Of course, Andrade is undefeated coming into this particular bout. He had defended the WBO title a couple of times since winning it in late 2018, when he defeated Walter Carlton Dacqua. He was supposed to fight Billy Joe Saunders at that time, but Saunders ended up testing positive for a PED. So that WBO title was vacated. And as a result, Andrade took on Carlton Dacqua, knocked him down multiple times, but ended up getting a decision win there for that. And had two defenses of that WBO title last year before getting this match against Luke Keeler. Keeler coming in with a record of 17 wins, 2 losses, and 1 draw. Pretty much got into this position with a win over Luis Arias over in Belfast back in August of 2019. So that is the brief background on the main event that happened there at Island Gardens, the Meridian at Island Gardens in Miami. And so, you know, going into this fight, you know, we had, you know, a lot of expectations for Demetrius Andrade. Andrade is someone who basically had to make an impression. Of course, we, you know, had the whole background of, you know, him trying to get fights with notable, you know, opponents that are out there in the middleweight division, including Canelo Alvarez, including Gennady Golovkin, including Jermall Charlo. But he has not been able to get those fights. So, you know, now him, all he's doing is, you know, currently making defenses of that WBO title. And he has this one here against Luke Keeler. And like I said, expectation is that that he was supposed to, you know, go through Luke Keeler. And, you know, once the, you know, bell rung to begin this particular fight, you had Demetrius Andrade step in there and, you know, give a basic 1-2 combination. And that 1-2 combination landed solidly on Luke Keeler to put Luke Keeler on his backside within the first couple of seconds of the first round. So he went down and he immediately got up and then went down to take a knee for the 8 count, basically 8 count, but he went down until it was, you know, the count of 9. And then got up. And so after that, I tried to see what was, you know, happening with Demetrius Andrade, if he could end up finishing, you know, finishing off Luke Keeler in that first round. He wasn't able to do that. But in the second round, he solidly landed another right hand that put Luke Keeler down to the canvas once again. And Keeler was able to get up from that, as that one was, seemed like it was a more serious shot that Andrade ended up connecting. So you had Keeler take another count there in that instance, and he was able to get up from that, but didn't necessarily see much out of Luke Keeler that made it to the point where Keeler had Andrade in trouble. So what ended up happening was Andrade just continued to dominate that particular fight. And he ended up, you know, winning this particular bout by a stoppage TKO victory. You know, was able to have the referee basically step in there, you know, before the end of, I think it was the end of the 9th. Round four, you know, Demetrius Andrade to score that stoppage victory over Luke Keeler, for him to stay undefeated and to keep that WBO version of the middleweight title. You know, he moves, he improves his record up there to 29 wins and no losses. He registers the 18th KO or stoppage victory of his pro career. But he was supposed to go in there and impress and basically blow out Luke Keeler. And there were like multiple instances where he looked very sloppy. He looked uncomposed, that he was just looking for, you know, the one shot with his right hand in order to take out Luke Keeler instead of just being patient and just set up his own shots and kind of, you know, bait Keeler into a trap to where he lands flush with that right hand. So, I mean, that while he was able to get that stoppage victory over Luke Keeler, you know, I don't, you know, necessarily see that that particular performance, you know, made many people be very impressed with Demetrius Andrade. You know, after the fight, I kind of asked a question or posted a question on the Twitter page as, you know, going with what happened with this particular fight, what did folks think about, you know, his momentum as far as like potentially being a serious contender in the middleweight division or, you know, having a chance to kind of like be that top guy in the middleweight division. And, you know, it said if the stock was up or the stock was down or if it, you know, basically remained the same. And most people felt that it remained the same. So, you know, with that being, you know, with that being said, that's kind of like, you know, what we get is that Demetrius Andrade is, you know, still that type of, you know, still the type of fighter that, you know, is an issue, would probably be an issue for a lot of the fighters, a lot of the top-ranked fighters in the middleweight division. But they, it's like some say, don't give, you know, enough for a fight of that magnitude to be of high interest, which kind of like I don't understand initially, because what ends up happening is that instead of having, you know, these other guys, the Charlos, the Golovkins, the Canelos fight Demetrius Andrade, they fight other guys there that are, you know, in the middleweight division that aren't necessarily near top ranked guys. You got, you know, Golovkin facing the likes of a Steve Rolls. You know, he did win a vacant title against Sergey Derevianchenko, but, you know, now he's, you know, trying to put up that title against Camille Cesaromeda, who's the highest ranked contender for the IBF. But like, why can't you, you know, go ahead and unify or try to unify against Demetrius Andrade? Jamal Charlo was an interim champion for the WBC, was elevated to world champion as Canelo Alvarez was named the franchise champion. But he hasn't, you know, had something where he could unify, you know, against, you know, Demetrius Andrade. And they're looking to try to set up something between Jamal Charlo and Chris Eubank Jr. as they were part of the same card in December. So you have those guys that are, you know, out there at middleweight, that are the top-ranked guys in middleweight. But you don't see them, you know, really talking about fighting Demetrius Andrade. Of course, you have this whole thing between Demetrius Andrade and Jamal Charlo that I'm going to, you know, break down in a little bit. But, you know, as of right now, it's seeing like Demetrius Andrade is aiming to try and fight the WBO champion at super middleweight, Billy Joe Saunders. So like I mentioned before, Billy Joe Saunders and Demetrius Andrade were supposed to fight for the WBO middleweight title, but with the whole thing that happened with Billy Joe Saunders, that fight was scrapped. So as a result, you have Demetrius Andrade winning the vacant WBO title at the time, and he has, like I said, defended that title for a couple of times now. So, you know, that's pretty much the situation there with the WBO middleweight championship and, you know, kind of like the middleweight division in particular. There's like a couple of other things that, you know, we could be talking about in reference to the middleweight division that I'll break down a little bit later. As, you know, we're kind of like having some news circling about as to, you know, what is next for Saul Canelo Alvarez. So that's like something that, you know, I'm kind of like looking towards to see what happens once Canelo Alvarez makes the decision as to who he is going to fight next. Then the domino effect will happen, you know, within the middleweight division and like and the super middleweight division as well. So that's something that I'm going to be keeping an eye on for the middleweight division and, you know, what else would happen with Demetrius Andrade. So that's what we have there in reference to that. There was some type of quote-unquote co-feature bout for the fight card at the Meridian at Island Gardens, but we're not quite going to mention that particular bout. I'm going to skip that bout. I'm going to be up front and center with you. I don't know anything about either one of those guys. I don't follow either one of those guys. I don't follow anyone that's even affiliated with either one of those guys. So I'm going to skip that. Okay. Now, I'm not sure if you have watched anything on the YouTube channel, but there was one particular guest on a live discussion that said that they don't necessarily follow those guys that are in the lower weight classes, but I'm the type of person that at least tries to do coverage on those guys. But when it comes to this thing about that co-feature that was in Miami, no, that's not me. I'm not doing it. So what I will do is I will talk about the fight between Tevin Farmer and JoJo Diaz. That was the fight that I was looking forward to seeing in this card. You had Tevin Farmer, who was defending the IBF Super Featherweight Championship, and this was his fifth defense of that IBF Featherweight Championship. He had, you know, defended the title, you know, at least two times a year, two times in 2018, two times in 2019. And he has his challenge against JoJo Diaz, or Joseph Diaz Jr., with the record of 30-1. His sole loss was to the WBC featherweight champion, Mr. Gary Russell Jr. And that is, that was his, you know, only, well, kind of like his only loss against a world champion, so to speak, at least to me, that it was. And he had another, you know, he had another shot where he could have won a world title, but he ended up being overweight for that particular bout, 1 pound overweight against Jesus Rojas. So he could have been a WBA featherweight champion, but due to him going into that particular weigh-in overweight, he missed weight, he could win that title. So this is after he had those, you know, two instances there. And, you know, now, you know, going up against Tevin Farmer, you know, they talked a lot of trash over the past, you know, few months. You know, JoJo Diaz, you know, pretty much called him out. Tevin Farmer answered the call, and they've been, you know, they had been back and forth a bunch of times, you know, up into this particular point. You had this fight between these two, you know, these two guys. And I was, like I said, I was waiting for this fight to see what would happen, to see if Joseph Diaz could basically wear down Tevin Farmer with his, you know, kind of like his come forward style and things like that, or if Tevin Farmer was going to, you know, use his defensive skill against Joseph Diaz. But one thing that was very weird going into this particular fight was that Tevin Farmer said that, you know, he was the bigger guy of sorts in that he was going to walk down JoJo Diaz. And that has never been Tevin Farmer's game. He's always been someone who is patient, kind of like fights off his back foot, backs up, and then tries to see every punch that his opponent throws and tries to defend against that particular punch. But he, you know, came forward early, and it ended up, you know, having, you know, I think it was through the thing with the clash. You know, clash of heads in the second round that caused the cut on JoJo Diaz. And I mean, initially, man, that was like a very, very, very bad cut. And I thought that because of that cut, the fight would be kind of like, you know, stopped prematurely. Whether it would have been, you know, at the end of the second round, the third round, or, you know, something like that. But, you know, two things happened there. You had, you know, the work done on the cut as much as it possibly could. And JoJo Diaz didn't allow Tevin Farmer to try to work on that particular cut. But also, Tevin Farmer didn't, to me, put in that much of an effort to try to make that cut worse. He, like, basically stood there in the pocket a lot of times and allowed JoJo Diaz to get off first in this particular bout. You know, if you watched it live, you kind of like seeing that. The commentators felt that there was something up with Tevin Farmer, that he kind of was, you know, looking off, you know, a few times while the fight was going on, like he was looking up at the, you know, the time, or, you know, maybe the large screen that was out there or something like that. But they felt that Tevin Farmer wasn't completely, you know, focused in this particular matchup. But the fight went the full 12 rounds, and with scores of 116, 112, and two scores of 115, 113, JoJo Diaz won the unanimous decision to take that IBF super featherweight title from Tevin Farmer. And, you know, the thing was, it kind of was interesting because, you know, through the CompuBox punch stats, it said that Tevin Farmer threw more punches, but he didn't land more punches. And that, you know, JoJo Diaz had a better connect percentage than Tevin Farmer, which is rare, you know, given the opponents that, you know, Tevin Farmer had faced up to this particular point. However, for many, they felt that JoJo Diaz was probably the best fighter that Tevin Farmer had ever faced up to this particular point. And so that kind of was why, to me, that was kind of why I look forward to this particular fight, because I wanted to see how Tevin Farmer would perform against JoJo Diaz, who, you know, had that championship fight experience, you know, against Gary Russell Jr. and, of course, the whole thing with him and Jesus Rojas. So, so now JoJo Diaz is, you know, world champion. I think it was a very important fight in both instances. I mean, you have one side with Tevin Farmer. Like I said, it was the, you know, I would say that was like the toughest fight up to this particular point, ever since he had became the IBF super featherweight champion. And you know, as far as I know, that was like the last fight while he was, you know, under the co-promotion with Matchroom Boxing. He's with, you know, Lou DiBella and you know, DiBella Entertainment. And the thing is, you know, with him is kind of like, what would be next? Yeah, he did have Tevin Farmer kind of like talking a lot on social media as far as like, oh, where am I going to sign? Who am I going to be rolling with next? And he kind of like teased that a little bit and said, he ultimately said that he was going to, you know, stay with what they have on the zone. But, you know, with this loss, you'll see what, you know, kind of like happens next. He did give, you know, complete credit to JoJo Diaz after the fight. He said, like, you know, he's going to, you know, go back to the drawing board. He most likely will do a rematch, which JoJo Diaz is open to. So, you know, we may see another fight between those two guys later on this year. But, you know, kind of says like a lot in reference to, you know, Tevin Farmer and JoJo Diaz. And I was going to go on the side of why it was very important for JoJo Diaz in a bit, but I want to get this caller in because this caller will particularly kind of go into why it was an important fight for both fighters and particularly for JoJo Diaz. So let me bring in from the 646 area code, one of the frequent guests on this show. You know this person as the president of the Deontay Wilder fan club, Mr.
Oh, I'm sorry. Continue. I apologize. But that was a great intro, JR. It's your boy from the 646. You already know what it is, man. But I'm just mute in the Super Bowl because it's gotten quite boring. And honestly, the only reason why I was watching the Super Bowl was to see how many commercials Wilder and Fury got. So far, they got one during the pregame festivities. And that's it so far. They better get one from the start of the third, no, from the end of the third quarter to the start of the fourth quarter. And that's usually when the most viewers are watching the Super Bowl. So I hope they get that. But what were you talking about, Tevin Farmer, JoJo Diaz?
Yeah, and, you know, another thing in reference to that, you know, the transition between the third and the fourth quarter, what makes it important right now is, you know, given the whole thing with the status of the Super Bowl, currently the game is tied. So as long as the game is close, you'll still have those viewers, you know, still tuning in to this, you know, to the Super Bowl. That's not like a blowout or anything like that. So you're going to be, you know, on the lookout for that. But yeah, I was talking about this whole thing with Tevin Farmer and JoJo Diaz, with, you know, Diaz winning the unanimous decision to take that IBF super featherweight title, and how that particular fight was important for both fighters. I talked about the instance with Tevin Farmer and, you know, him being at the end of that co-promotional deal with Matchroom Boxing, and, you know, like the television thing and whatnot. You know, he said that he's most likely re-signing with DAZN. But on the other side, you have JoJo Diaz, and I was going to go into why it was important for JoJo Diaz to win this particular fight. You know, it was his third world title fight. He had the first one against Gary Russell Jr., ended up losing that. Goes into the next fight against Jesus Rojas for the WBA featherweight title and ends up missing weight by 1 pound. So with this being his third chance, you know, that's pretty much like, yo, third shot is usually your last one. So if he lost this one, you know, it could have potentially been the end of him having a relationship with Golden Boy Promotions. Think you could get into that a little bit more?
Yeah, well, back in December, we know Golden Boy had its issues basically with Ryan Garcia. Oh, shit. Oh, I'm sorry. Wilder versus Fury commercials just came on halftime. Wow. Okay, anyway, I apologize. Golden Boy, let's go back to November, actually, or October. Golden Boy had its issues with Canelo. They basically gave away Canelo's IBF title behind his back without him knowing. They made a little side agreement with the IBF where Canelo would be forced to vacate the title if they couldn't reach an agreement with Sergey Derevyanchenko. They didn't even bother asking for a purse bid. They just said, if we don't reach a deal, just take the title, which to me is completely stupid. That's really malpractice. Canelo was not too happy about that. Then you had Andrew Cancio, who was also a Golden Boy fighter. He was complaining about the promotion that Golden Boy was giving him, which was basically none. We know Oscar De La Hoya has his issues with substance abuse and other things that we won't get into right now, but he has not been doing a good job of promoting his fighters. And Andrew Cancio complained about it. Andrew Cancio had the misfortune of getting beat in his title fight, and Golden Boy released Andrew Cancio basically the next day after he got beat in his title fight. Fast forward to December 21st, you had JoJo Diaz complain about his promotion, or lack thereof, with Golden Boy. He said basically after he lost to Gary Russell Jr., Golden Boy paid no attention to him anymore. They didn't try to promote him. They didn't, you know, try to rebuild his image within the public eye. And he was not happy about that. So we know Golden Boy has a history of basically tossing fighters to the side that they don't deem important whenever they lose. And if JoJo Diaz would have lost to Tevin Farmer, I can guarantee you JoJo Diaz would have been without a promoter the following day. So he had a lot riding on this. Now, Tevin Farmer, he had a lot riding on this too, because although we suspect he's going to re-sign with Matchroom at DAZN, he didn't put pen to paper yet. So how much dollars can he command coming off a loss in which he looked like complete? You know, he turned down $2 million to fight Tank Davis, and he ended up losing to JoJo Diaz for a fraction of the cost on the undercard of a YouTube fight on a Thursday night. So, you hate to see it, man. That's a tough loss for Kevin Farmer, but it is a great victory for JoJo Diaz, and he is someone that I am very, very happy for.
Now, I'm trying to see if I could get some information on this thing for the purse, but what I see right now for Tevin Farmer, I don't necessarily believe it. They're saying that Tevin Farmer got at least $1 million for this fight, and that he will earn an extra $500,000. I don't see that. We don't believe you.
You need more people.
Like I don't see that at all. Because while they say, I mean, we know about the whole thing between Tevin Farmer and Tank Davis, as far as like that particular offer, $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing that I see where that offer was basically matched, you know, for Tevin Farmer to fight anybody else. You see what I mean? So they didn't kind of like, there wasn't anything that like was publicized in reference to that. And with the people that are directly affiliated with Tevin Farmer, one way or another, I completely feel that we would have known if Tevin Farmer would have earned $2 million for this particular fight against JoJo Diaz,
yep.
given
we
the people that are directly involved with him, and we know he
because
did.
Because if he's gonna earn $2 million, you still gotta pay JoJo Diaz. So you're telling me that you're gonna pay what $2.5 to $3 million for a fight that's third on a card, and it's not even the draw. It's not the main event. It's not the co-feature.
It's not the co-feature
fight. So you're going to pay $3 million for that?
Yeah,
I guess I can see it. Nope. Eddie Hearn is a bit of an idiot. You know what? Maybe Farmer made $5 million. Who knows? With Eddie Hearn overpaying everybody.
You're saying it's over the audio, but when you're face to face with Eddie Hearn,
I like Eddie Hearn.
He has
nice eyes. What do you want me to say, man? That's very charming.
Oh no.
Very charming, man.
Come on, man. Don't tell me he got you like Cal Ripken Jr., man. Don't come on, man.
No. Like Dave Chappelle when he said he met Prince.
Oh, goodness.
Aura. Oh boy.
Yo, he had this
Farmer made that, man.
Yo, had this guy named Mickey Free. No, I'm just kidding. All right. Jeez, man, I'm trying to hold it together, bro. So we did have that whole thing with the IBF title, and like I said, there might be a rematch. I don't know if that's going to be immediately, called or not, whatnot. But I know that you weren't necessarily a fan of Tevin Farmer, so this, you know, kind of was a little bit of a good result for you. And, the live discussion that we had, I picked Diaz to win. I said, there was just something that I was like, this isn't going to be a win for Tevin Farmer. So,
he was not fighting James Pennington anymore. No.
Yeah, he was not fighting Joan O'Carroll either. We got another caller in here from the 813. What's going on? You're on the Boxing Shorts radio show.
What up, though? This is Terrell. You already know what it is. Hey, just real quick. First of all, go Chiefs, AFC all the way. Anyways, so Tevin Farber lost to JoJo Diaz. I know you guys already chopped it up or anything, but so now Tevin Farber now has what, six, seven losses, I think it is. And it's six. Funny, if someone come in with the with not too much knowledge of boxing, and they would look at his record, they would say he's trash. in terms of just day and age, in terms of the record, I mean he's not a trash fighter, but when you look at that record and when you look at the fact that he lost this fight, it looks pretty bad at this point. So he has to get a rematch. He has to win, because if not, he's going down to the bottom. I won't say the bottom, but he's going to be somewhat of an afterthought if he does take a rematch and loses that as well. Right. But the one main question I want both you guys to address, because I need your technical expertise. During the fight with Farmer and Diaz, there were several occasions where he's like towards the middle of the ring, and that wandering eye kept looking up. Can anyone tell me what he's looking at?
I'm not going to answer that. No, I actually tried to answer that question. I said that he was like looking at the large screen that was out there over at the Meridian at Island Gardens. Commentators were saying that he was looking at the time or something. I'm not going to go any further into that.
I just think he was concussed. That's all. He was just concussed, man. I think he was just concussed. That's what it was.
Maybe it was that they did, have him be checked at the local hospital, and then, he said it was cleared of everything. So,
I'm not cockeyed like Tevin Farmer, but I do have a lazy eye, and when I'm like really out of it, the lazy eyes just start wandering, man. So I can just imagine what it is when you got a cockeyed like that. I mean, he was probably out of it and concussed. That eye was just jumping everywhere, man. I bet you he was seeing like four JoJo Diazes in the ring, man.
But no, even with that, we already know Farmer only has six KOs, I believe it is. So he has virtually no power. And nothing to fend someone off. And Diaz definitely knew that going to the fight. He won the fight. Plain and simple. That's all to it. Farmer, he has to keep that rematch. He has to win. Because at this point, another win, seven to eight losses, whatever it is, not a good look at all. He has a name. It's kind of funny when you go back over the past year, like we talked about the last show, the opportunity that he passed up to fight Tank, right? And that was what $5 million that he rejected or whatever it was. And now when he looks back in retrospect, it was a bad decision. Because now he lost to, I'm not calling Diaz a journeyman, by someone that's challenged for the title a couple times before and finally got it. When you could have fought a match with Tank back then, even if you'd have lost that, you got $5 million a purse in the bank.
No, $2 million. $2 million. He was offered $2 million for Farmer.
Okay. But, versus what he made for this is not in comparison. So, got to do better on your decision making. And what's funny, Farmer talks mad trash in this leadership. I mean, most fighters do, but Farmer's definitely up there with him in terms of just talking junk on in the build to a fight. So it's like in his fight, he's like, "I'm going to whoop JoJo Diaz's ass." Well, you simply didn't do that, So you gotta you walk the walk, gotta talk the talk. So it goes.
Yeah, it looked like, y'all talk about this thing with Tevin Farmer. So I guess you're saying that he was pulling the Adam Gaze out there, looking at the scoreboard or something during the fight, maybe. But, his record is, 30 wins, 5 losses, and 1 draw. And the thing, he had, a string of wins, and won no contest. Because he lost those 4 fights pretty much, very early in his career, with that last one being to Jose Pedraza, getting, stopped by Jose Pedraza back a while ago. But ever since then, he had a string of wins and, eventually became IBF Super Featherweight Champion. But, going into that thing with him and Tank Davis, You could have had that fight set up. I mean, it was, you know, talked about. You know, they were trying to build it up to try to make that fight happen. I think, you know, from the beginning of 2019, that was one of the fights that, you know, some people within boxing wanted to see happen. And he had the whole thing, you know, between, you know, him, Eddie Hearn, Lou DiBella, and Tank Davis and Leonard Ellerbe. And they, you know, Ellerbe and those with Mayweather Promotion sent that offer. And Tevin Farmer ultimately turned it down. And, you know, then on one side you have, you know, Gervonta Tank Davis going to Atlanta, facing Yoryorkis Gamboa, and, you know, having a very successful event there against Gamboa. And now on the flip side, you have Farmer here going up against Diaz, and he ends up losing his fight, and it's a serious setback for him. So they may have a rematch there for that, but, you know, even with that, that's still a serious step back for Tevin Farmer. Next thing I wanted to, you know, get into was the super bantamweight title fight, Daniel Roman against Mirodzhan Akhmadaliev. That, you know, that fight was the opener in the DAZN telecast. You know, Akhmadaliev was the, you know, amateur coming in there with 7 wins and no losses. Daniel Roman, the unified champion, WBA and IBF. And, you know, in the first couple of rounds, you know, it seemed to me that Akhmadaliev was, you know, pretty much on a completely different level than Daniel Roman. He was, you know, controlling the distance, getting in and out of the pocket, seeing everything that Daniel Roman was doing. And then that actually, that happened for, like, to me, like the first 4 rounds. And it didn't take until like the 5th round for Daniel Roman to like be very focused, be more patient, try to set Akhmadaliev, you know, up with some traps and catch him with some good body shots, working with some body shots, working the uppercut as well. And I felt that, you know, up until that point, it was just, you know, too late. And, you know, while it was a split decision with two scores, 115-113 to Akhmadaliev and one to Daniel Roman, I think, you know, Roman could have, you know, if he would have started that, you know, a lot earlier, he probably would have been a little bit more successful on that one end. I think he would have been able to try to, you know, use his pro experience against a guy that just had, you know, in his 8th professional fight. And yeah, I just think he pretty much blew it. Akhmadaliev, you know, was a favorite going into the fight. And, you know, while he looked a little bit impressive over the first, you know, few rounds or so, it kind of like looked like he, you know, slacked off going into the tail end or the back half of the fight, especially the last 2 rounds. I think he didn't do anything at all in the last 2 rounds, and that could have cost him, you know. So that's the, you know, quick synopsis I have of this particular fight. Matt, what did you think about that fight and Akhmadaliev's performance?
Well, first of all, I thought Roman won the fight 7-5. I'm not sure how you can give that fight to Akhmadaliev. To me, Roman was busier, doing better work, controlled the fight. To me, he fought the fight that he wanted to fight. I just think that it's just a case of, unless Roman got the knockout, he was not going to be allowed to win that fight. Akhmadaliev, I guess, is very important to the zone and what they're trying to build, and Eddie Hearn. And we saw on Akhmadaliev's shorts, his shorts were sponsored by DAZN, which I have never, ever, ever seen a fighter with the network that they are fighting on basically sponsoring their trunks. But, you know, it is what it is. Who gives a fuck about these little people? You know, it's just these low weight classes. I don't give a shit. You know, I can't even really build up the energy to get mad about it.
Oh, God.
Roman got screwed. It is what it is, man. Who cares? On to the next one.
For those that, you know, listen live and will be listening to the podcast, remember what I said earlier about the live YouTube telecast in reference to me not necessarily caring about YouTube fighters and having the guest that was on the live not caring about the fighters in the lower weights. Well, there you have it. It's put on wax once again. Yeah, the thing with the shorts, we did see it on Ahmed Ali's shorts. I also saw it on Andre's shorts as well. But yeah, I've never seen, you know, fighters have a network, you know, be a sponsor for a particular fighter. That's, you know, that's rare. Or not rare, that's, you know, never been seen as far as I know. So
is that a conflict of interest?
Maybe,
that doesn't even just look bad.
Like, for me, it wouldn't. Like, I'll put it to you this way. If this was done before DAZN came up, then people would be raising red flags. If, like say, for example, Gennady Golovkin, if they had HBO on his trunks, people would, you know, raise some questions because, of course, he's had the, you know, whole thing or the accusations that HBO, you know, backed him, the likes of him, the likes of Slomachenko and stuff like that. So,
and Kovalev.
I mean, here, yeah, and Kovalev too. So that's the, you know, issues that we have there with having someone having a network be plastered on their trunks as a sponsor. So, you know, that's the thing with that. Going in, like, I was going to put up the thing for the CompuBox numbers. Daniel Roman threw 728 punches over the course of the fight. Ahmed Ali threw 498 punches over the course of the fight. Ahmed Ali kind of, you know, looked like he was dancing and prancing around the ring. You know, folks were calling him MJ Ahmed Ali because he likes to dance, but mainly because people don't want to say Mirajin, you know. So I guess he's supposed to be the little version of Oleksandr Usyk or something. I don't know, man. But, you know, that's what we got, you know, out of this particular bout. I don't know what is, you know, basically, you know, next for either fighter.
Nobody,
you know,
cares.
Said that,
that's why you don't know. You know you don't care, JR.
Come on,
you know,
man.
You don't,
look,
care.
That,
stop,
look,
it, man.
Is,
you don't give a damn.
That is my job as a boxing reporter. I have to report these type of fights. Apparently, this fight was supposed to be for September 13th in New York. And one of the things that I kind of like was hearing leading up to the bout was, and I think this was in, what is it, one of those other podcasts that you were talking about, Matt, is that the reason why Roman took this fight was because of the MONEY, and that they offered something to him that he just couldn't pass up. So, you know, I guess there was like nothing out there for Roman where he could, you know, basically get as much money as he did for fighting Ahmed Aliyev. So that's what we got out of that. Anything from you, Terrell, real quick on this?
No, it's like I said, the result could have said wait either way, and when you look at the CompuBox numbers, that would definitely tend to suggest that Roman should have won that fight. He didn't. So, bottom line, we got the result that we have at this point. looking at I can't say this dude's name for nothing or whatever. 2016 Olympic silver medalist, world championship silver medalist, things like that. And but aside from that, so he has extensive amateur experience. We know that. But when you look at the optics of this, we see the zone logo on his shorts, things like that, and you think you automatically think there's some influence over this fight. And when you look at that even further, or just think about that, is like DAZN trying to make their own Vasily Lomachenko. And because and the reason why I even throw that name out there, Vasily came in as a pro, fought right away for a title. Now I know Abdul whatever, it's already had 7 fights or whatever it is and stuff like that. But it's just kind of unusual for someone to come in with just a few pro fights and get a title shot. So basically, he's been fast tracked. If you've been fast tracked, who's behind you? Who's the leverage behind you? So
exactly.
They're looking at him to fast track alone. And for me, so when I look at his record, it looks like they're trying to make their own Vasily Lomachenko. That's what it looks like to me, right? So, and whether that be warranted or not. So,
this is I think that they were trying to do this before. There was a guy, a fighter out there. Well, he's still, you know, undefeated. Let me see. Where is he at? Okay, he is at 147. Okay. A decorated amateur himself, but he's at welterweight. And that's Daniil Yelutsenov, right? Yelutsenov was the gold medalist at the 2016 Games.
Give a fuck. What are you talking about?
Come on, man.
Are you
listen.
What's his name again? You said Daniil Yelutsenov?
Daniil Yelutsenov.
Saw that. I need to look this man up.
You don't fact check.
I'm fact checking right now. I think you just made that goddamn name up.
Daniyar is his first name. Yelutsenov.
I should be able to spell that, huh?
Yelutsenov. Okay.
Oh my God! Look at this guy. He's almost 30.
Yes, he's almost 30. Well, hey, you had Vasily Lomachenko. When did Vasily Lomachenko get into the game? Pretty much what, 27, 28?
Yo, this dude is almost 30. And he's from Kazakhstan.
Yes, see?
And what did I say about up on teenagers a couple years ago?
What did I say about you don't have this thing? And so they're doing the same thing here.
Tell
with
him fight Stein.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Okay. Yep.
Yeah,
do
tell him fight Spence. See how that shit works out.
Yeah, fight Spence. Yeah. have him fight Errol Spence. And so here they're doing this with Murajan Akhmadaliyev. So I see the same thing as far as like having, you know, money behind or a network behind a fighter from, you know, those countries. So, you know, HBO did it. It seems like DAZN is trying to do it here with Akhmadaliyev. So,
what's your thoughts on that, though? You think it's a good idea?
I don't know.
Because HBO put their money behind Lomachenko, Triple G, and Kovalev, and then HBO went out of business. So, how successful was that?
They can't put too much money behind Akhmadaliyev because, one, he's in the division that's like, oh goodness. So,
he's smaller than Rey Mysterio Jr. Like, come on, man. Get out of here.
This guy said Rey Mysterio Jr. Like, you can't put him in there against the guys like Ray Vargas and Emmanuel Navarrete. So what is he going to do with Super Bantamweight? Come on. Yo, that can't happen. Oh, goodness, man. Oh, my goodness. You got this like he's going to fight Viano 5 or something, man. Like,
yeah, he is. He should. Listen, nobody cares about these guys, man. I'm telling you, boxing fans only pretend like they care so they can sound like they're smart, hardcore fans. They don't really care. That's why these guys don't draw no money. That's why these guys don't draw no ratings. Nobody gives a fuck about these guys, man.
Is that how you really feel?
All right.
That's how you really feel?
Yeah, I don't give a damn about these guys, man.
Oh, man. So, listen. Yo, Matt Brown, it looks like Matt is kind of the equivalent to when they made the thing for Kristaps Porzingis. And then they made this soundbite.
They drafted who? Who the fuck is this? This cocksucker might not even have a fucking green card. Get the fuck out of here, you motherfucker. Who the fuck is this kid? They drafted who? Who the fuck is...
shout out to Michael Rappaport doing his impression of the great Danny Aiello, rest in peace. Oh, my God. Yeah, how'd that work out for the Knicks also? Not very well. You know, I don't care about these guys.
He had his exit interview with the Knicks, and now he's with Dallas. So, that's pretty much that. I'm going to revisit, well, not necessarily revisit the fight. But this is a topic that we've been talking about for the past few days. Demetrius Andrade. before this fight, he re-upped with Matchroom. Okay. And there was talk about him potentially fighting Jermall Charlo in a unification bout. Of course, you have the whole thing with Eddie Hearn and Radio Raheem here. And talking about him sending an email with an offer. And on the case of Demetrius Andrade, he was on another podcast stating that what was offered was not of much interest to him because he only wanted one fight with Jermall Charlo. So apparently he's saying that what was offered to him was a multi-fight deal under Showtime or under PBC or whatever it is. But he was looking for a one-fight deal. Now, what I'm looking for is if there was any instance where Showtime or PBC offered a one-fight deal to Demetrius Andrade. We have the information about Eddie Hearn sending an email to Jermall Charlo.
No, we don't.
But,
no, we don't.
Well, it's not
good. No, we don't.
But... What's the thing about why some people don't consider that to be a valid offer, whether he sent the email or not? Why is it not necessarily considered to be a valid offer to some?
Because he ain't talked to Jermall Charlo's business representative, who he just made the Javier Fortuna versus Luke Campbell fight with. So he knows Al Heyman's phone number. He just don't know it when he's trying to make a fight to Andrade. Go figure that.
So there it is. So if they actually made an offer for Jermall Charles to fight Demetrius Andrade, then there would have been something sent over to Al Heyman in reference to this particular thing. You could believe it. You may not believe it, but that's what that is. Because, like we said, Eddie Hearn has communicated with Al Heyman over the course of the past few years on multiple occasions, dealing with multiple fights and dealing with multiple fighters. So y'all take that as you will. Now, one other thing that was discussed in the side of Jermall Charlo. We know that he had, you know, recent, fight card that was in December where he won and he, you know, ended up having a co-feature bout dealing with a Chris Eubank Jr. against Matt Korobov, with Chris Eubank Jr. winning. And that fight seems like it's going to be put together. One thing that was said about this particular fight raised my eye. Brother Matt, could you expound on this a little bit between Jermall Charlo and Chris Eubank Jr.?
Yeah, it is my belief the winner of Charlo versus Eubank Jr. is going to become the WBA super champion. I say that because right now Chris Eubank is the interim champion. Ryota Murata is the regular champion. And then you have Canelo Alvarez, as the super champion. Canelo is not going back to 160 anytime soon. So he is going to vacate his WBA title. They're probably going to have like some little deal with him where if he wants to fight for it, as soon as he comes back, he could come fight for it. But they are going to vacate that super title just in time for Charlo and Eubank to fight for it, because Charlo is already the WBC champion. And we all know the WBA has a history of this. They had a vacated WBA heavyweight title that they allowed, wrongly, I might add, but I won't go into that right now. They allowed the English Muffin, Anthony Joshua, to fight for that title against Vladimir Klitschko. So history will repeat itself, and you will get Charlo versus Eubank in a unification bout for the WBC, WBA titles.
Now, that is contingent on what may happen with a Saul Canelo Alvarez, as he is slated to fight, they say, on May 2nd at the T-Mobile Arena. Now, if he fights Ryota Murata, then the whole thing between Charlo and Chris Eubank is basically null and void, because it would be the super champion against the regular champion in the middleweight division. However, I don't think that Canelo Alvarez will face Ryota Murata at the T-Mobile Arena in May of this year. I just don't see it. So we will have to find out what the WBA says in reference to all of that. I'm not going to go into that whole heavyweight situation, because that has been clearly laid out. And they asked, and one thing that even with the whole thing with that tournament thing, they actually follow the rules as much as they possibly can, second to the IBF. So won't necessarily go into that. But Terrell, anything about Demetrius Andrade or Jermall Charlo or what's going on in the middleweight division?
No, just, you know, with Andre, he fought this guy, Keeler, who's a virtual unknown and has never fought on this level before. We already know, some of you guys already probably talked about the fight. He did what he had to do, but like your poll on Twitter states, did he improve his stance, his performance, or his chances in the middleweight division for being considered for as a top fighter, more opportunities, stuff like that? And really, the dominant answer is not really. You still think of him as the same guy, you know, southpaw WBO champion at middleweight. What does he do next from here? Because even the Bible killer, he's just wild. And, I mean, it's like it was almost like a wild dog trying to get at a cat. You know what I'm saying? Just he's not composed. I mean, just wild. Well, you know, he finally got him out of there. What was seventh, eighth, ninth round, whatever it was. But even just when you think of the performance as a whole, I'm like, whatever. Yeah, you're supposed to do that. You're supposed to do that against that guy, you know. But what's next to him? Who knows? Who knows? Let's see, just resign with Masroom for a fourth fight deal. What's next? No one knows. And it's kind of crazy being with one of the major providers out there in the zone and who has a stable who can make fights. But what does he get? What's he going to get next? It definitely won't be a major fight with someone else, you know. And there's names within that under their banner they can fight, but will they make those fights? Munguia, people like that. Will it happen? We don't know, and it's not likely that will happen. Even with the Canelo stuff, I mean, it's like it or love it. Canelo is now we already know the cash cow boxing, and can pretty much do whatever the hell that he wants. And we just have to accept it at this point. Whether it be jumped up to light heavy, find a Kovalev that's in a sense cherry picking things like that, or just going back down 168, giving us some bullshit to say he's gonna fight Billy Joe Sanders, which would be a decent fight, but will it actually happen? Like, even with the fight supposed to fight with Ryoto, right, for Cinco de Mayo for this year, it's like. What would his true fan base think of that fight? Would that help put seats asses in the seats, things like that? Not necessarily. So, I mean, at this point, he has that Floyd Mayweather factor where he can just basically do whatever the hell he wants, and we just have to accept it.
Yeah, that's the thing that we have here in this middleweight situation, is that, you know, like you're saying there, Terrell, I mean, Canelo Alvarez is the cash cow of the, you know, middleweight division, and also, you know, commands what happens in 168 and possibly 175. So, you know, once we figure out who Canelo Alvarez ends up fighting in May, it will have a domino effect as far as like what other fights can get made within the next 5 to 6 months of 2020. So we got to see, like, how that whole thing turns out, you know. And the thing with Andre, you know, we have those possibilities. He was talking about fighting Billy Joe Saunders. The whole thing with Jamal Charlo seems to be mute. And then there is a possibility that he could fight former WBO super welterweight champion Jaime Munguia, as he moved up to middleweight and, you know, beat up Spike O'Sullivan and is now the number one contender for the WBO middleweight title. Speaking of Spike O'Sullivan, I think that there was a comment, I think it was by Oscar De La Hoya or something like that, saying that Spike O'Sullivan could possibly fight for a world title. I was like, did I read that right? I don't know, man. I don't know. You know, so that was, one thing that I kind of like was thinking about immediately after the Andre fight is that how would the whole middleweight situation turn out here for the end of the first half of 2020 going into the second half of 2020. So that's kind of what we have there. For those that are, you know, listening in live, you could call in 347-237-5539. Wanted to, you know, get into a little bit of things here with, you know, what's going on next week real quick. You have Kell Brook. That'll be in action against Mark DeLuca and he's still at super welterweight. I don't know what Yakel Brook's going to end up doing. You have Kid Galahad. That will be in action there, who's, you know, some felt got robbed against Josh Warrington. He'll be fighting Claudio Marrero. And
isn't that another Al Haitman guy, Claudio Marrero?
Yeah, that's Marrero. That's you know, in this thing here for
Eddie
fight in
reach Al.
Sheffield.
Oh, okay. Cool.
So,
just making sure Eddie can reach Al.
Yeah, but hey, but there's a I'm telling you that's it depends, because remember, Al Haitman is has multiple titles for multiple fighters, so that's kind of the thing there with how he works things out. Okay. You also have over in Allentown, Pennsylvania, Gary Russell Jr. defending his WBC featherweight championship against Suksat Yambayar. We will be scheduling an interview with Gary Russell Jr. This is for Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time here. So we're going to, you know, have that here for a few moments before he heads out to Allentown, PA for that particular matchup. In the co-feature, you're going to have Guillermo Rigondeaux against Laborio Solis for the regular WBA Bantamweight Championship. And you know, also, Gary Antoine Russell will be in action in this card, and we'll see if they can have Gary Antonio Russell part of that card as well. So that's, you know, what's on slate for you know, February 8th at Allentown, Pennsylvania. We know that, you know, the Russells are, you know, located in the DMV area. But apparently, Brother Matt was telling me about something that would be taking place on March 14th in the MGM National Harbor. This is going to be a day after my birthday, and before it was announced, I was like, okay, what in the world would they have at MGM National Harbor on March 14th? And then I saw the announcement, and I was like, oh my goodness. Matt, could you please talk about this, because God, I'm getting upset again.
From the where he'd been at, pal, the lost and found, you have the great, and I say that very loosely, the great James Kirkland returning to action against someone named Marco Hernandez at the MGM Grand National Harbor in the DMV area on March 14th. And it's going to be on FS1. It's going to headline the card. And God damn it, can't wait.
So that is James Kirkland, also known as the Mandingo Warrior, going up against Mark Anthony Hernandez. This
yeah, that's
is
one of
the
worst nicknames I've ever heard in boxing, by the way.
Of all time, I would say.
Yeah.
James Kirkland, who, you know, got blasted by Canelo Alvarez on May 9th, 2015 in Houston. And he was not in the ring for 4 years until he got back in the ring in August of 2019 over in his area near San Antonio and got a couple of fights there. And now he's fighting Mark Anthony Hernandez. They're going to have, what is this? According to this thing on BoxRec, they have a Iamontis Stanionis against Justin Deloach. That will be part of that card as well. The same Justin Deloach that lost to Nathaniel Gallimore and the new unified super welterweight champion, Jason Rosario. I'm sorry, man. I'm going to New York. I'm seeing Shakur Stevenson, man. Come on, man.
You ain't
right, come
shit.
On.
You ain't
come
shit,
come on,
man.
Come on,
support
yo.
Local guys.
Come on.
Support local
come
guys,
on, man.
Man. There's a local fight in your backyard.
Who's local in this?
That's a good question. I'm sure. Listen, I'm pretty sure they're gonna put. How many more kids does Gary Russell Sr. have? They're gonna put a couple more of those guys on there, man.
No, man, no. All of them will be in Allentown, Pennsylvania. So no. They will not be on this card. Or, well, maybe, I know who could possibly be on this card. You know who could possibly be on this card, too. And that's our guy. Come on, man. It's got to be the Soldier. Maybe the Soldier could be on that card.
Jamal Harris?
No, that's not the Marine. Talking about the Soldier, man. You know, the guy that's trained by our favorite trainer? Or our favorite coach?
No.
Yeah. I think he may possibly be involved in this particular card, man. I think it's going to happen. So I'm going to, I'll give them a call. And,
we talked to Coach Floyd.
Yeah, we're going to see if he's going to, possibly be in this particular thing. It's almost time for him to, have another fight, So, yeah, I think that, they're going to probably bring him back. So, we'll see how that happens. But James Kirkland.
Come on, you're not excited.
MGM National Harbor, man. Come on, man. Come on, man.
You're not excited about this? Somebody getting knocked out. This ain't going to full 12.
Well, it's not going to full 12. And
somebody getting knocked out.
12 or 10 or whatever. Yeah, someone's getting knocked out. Yes, I do feel that someone's getting knocked out. But, man, Kirkland has had 36 total fights up to this particular point, and 32 of them have ended in a knockout. Now, two times he got knocked out, but still. I mean, those fights still ended in a knockout. So that's what you have there. So that's the thing with March 14th at the MGM National Harbor. Now, wanted to get into this here real quick. Of course, this is, less than 3 weeks away. Okay. Got to go back into this here. Deontay Wilder, Tyson Fury, the rematch. Two undefeated guys there. Heavyweight title fight. Joint pay-per-view. And, one of these guys said that this is one of the most important fights in boxing. I want them to expand on that a little bit, and then I will add a couple of things on this.
Well, it was me, of course. I think it's probably the most important fight of my lifetime, your lifetime, probably in the last, I'd say, 30-odd years, because you have the WBC title, the lineal heavyweight title, you have two of the biggest media conglomerates in Fox and ESPN, you have PBC and Top Rank all working together for this one huge event. And a lot is riding on this event. If this event is successful and everybody makes all the money that they think they're going to make, then I think you will see more crossing of the street, so to speak. You will see Errol Spence versus Terrence Crawford. You will see Vasily Lomachenko versus Tank Davis. You will see all the fights that fans want to see. But if this fight flops commercially, then you are going to see a lot of finger pointing. And we know how nasty things can get between Bob Arum and Al Heyman. We saw the Cold War in boxing a few years ago between when it was Golden Boy and Top Rank, where they refused to make any fights together. We saw how that affected the sport. So we need to hope that this fight is everything that they think is going to be, because a lot is riding on it.
Well, and this is like kind of going into what you were saying when you did call in. This fight is very important from a pay-per-view standpoint. We've had, the era of Floyd Mayweather is done and over with. And ever since then, we haven't really had a pay-per-view event has really reached 500,000 pay-per-view buys, if I'm not mistaken. I think that, the thing with Pacquiao and Thurman got to 400,000, but nothing more than that. The first fight.
Well, Pacquiao versus Thurman did 500.
Okay, did 500. Okay. So, but the first fight between Wilder and Fury got around 325,000 pay per view buys. And that was, just with Showtime. This is now a joint pay per view between Fox and ESPN. Last time we had like that joint pay per view type of thing was for Mayweather and Pacquiao. And of course, that had over, 4 million pay per view buys. Well, according to Rick Glaser, it probably did 3.5, but hey, it is what it is. But yeah, this is a very, very important event. And I'm going to go into the thing for Twitter, and this is like outside of the thing for Boxing Source. There is a guy by the name of John Ehrenhofer that is a sports commentator that said that, before the Super Bowl, he said, if Wilder Fury 2 gets promo time during the Super Bowl tomorrow, which I presume it will, it's the equivalent of not only a massive money investment in that fight, but the sport of boxing as well. Now, we've seen in the pregame that they had a commercial for Wilder versus Fury 2. And before halftime, we just saw a small commercial of Wilder versus Fury 2. I think it was, about 10 seconds or so. And you saw another one, but you see like how much money it takes, for, things to be reserved for the Super Bowl. I don't know if it's, anything that's network related, but you have to have some type of thing some type of deal worked in order to reserve time, a time slot for an event of this magnitude.
The average 30-second commercial in the Super Bowl cost $5.6 million for just 30 seconds.
Yeah, for just 30 seconds, my thing is like, well, you're having these commercials out there, man. That means you're putting in big bread. And you can't be, you know, putting in that big bread unless if you know that you're going to get significant returns on it. So I agreed with you know, John Ehrenhofer in reference to that. But I also responded. I said that with all this money that's being invested in this particular fight, it has to be successful without question. Like, you can't have the whole thing where after the first fight they were talking about 10 million people streaming the fight. Like, that can't happen. You know,
yeah, this ain't DAZN.
You got to be able.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't have this thing to the point where you don't have a return of 325,000 pay-per-view buys. You can't have something in a joint pay-per-view where it's 500,000 pay-per-view buys. You got to be looking at it like how Bob Arum looks at it. Like, oh, man, this fighter's going to have 2 million pay-per-view buys. It's going to be the biggest fight ever. Like, something like that. So a lot is riding on the line in reference to this particular matchup being very successful. And from a business perspective for me, I think it has to be promoted to those that are watching the Super Bowl, that are, you know, not watching anything that's necessarily related to boxing, in order for them to have some particular interest in this particular fight. And these two guys have to be built up as guys that are known outside of boxing, so to speak. It has to be at the level of, I was thinking about it. I think it has to be at the level of anticipation, like the first fight between Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield. I think it has to be up to that particular level to where, you know, people will actually stop and watch the fight wherever they are. That to me is how that bout would be successful. If they get it to the particular point where people have to stop what they're doing and order the fight, or go to the bar, or go to a movie theater, or anything like that in order to watch the fight. That's what has to happen to me. And Terrell, if you're still on, what do you think about it?
Well, it's like one piece of news that came out recently Bob Arum, where he made a proposal for Crawford to fight Conor McGregor in a two fight bout, one being a boxing match and one being an MMA fight. And it's just the new age of boxing. And even the card where we just had this past week with Miami, where we had the YouTubers on that card. And I mean, bottom line, the YouTubers, they bring us viewers to an event. But does that translate into dollars and pay-per-view buys? That remains to be seen, because right now the sample size is still small, right? But even something like that, it's like these people are just getting more and more inventive and trying to put asses in the seats. And it's like, to the a pure boxing fan, yeah, probably doesn't like that, you know? But at the same time, you got these business services out there, DAZN, ESPN Plus, things like that. And bottom line, they're trying to generate more subscribers through their service and everything. But it's just funny, man. It's just real funny how boxing is going out right now. We already know that we look at the evolution of boxing from being just a live fight, being on regular TV, things like that, moving on to HBO, Showtime, things like that, and moving on now. And even now, the way boxing is consumed now is different now with these streaming platforms. I mean, bottom line, you got these figureheads, Eddie Hearn, Bob Arum, at the forefront of their networks, and they have to generate, take a ways to generate pay-per-view buys. Not just subscribers, things like that. And like I said, it's just funny. Just boxing is, in a sense, changing in the way it's consumed before our eyes and everything like that. So it's just real interesting to see what's going on and what's happening. But it's like that's to the purists. For myself, I don't care for a YouTuber being on the boxing card, but that's probably going to become the norm now. Even with the crap where, Hearn is trying to give Logan Paul to fight Antonio Brown of the NFL. It's just ridiculous. It's not boxing, but yet something like that will probably generate interest from the regular public. Even with the Deontay Wilder Fury coverage, it's good to see these guys. They're putting money out there for to promote the fight, things like that. It's on the Super Bowl coverage. Good. But bottom line, will that translate into more pay-per-view buys? Remains to be seen. But at the same time, these two guys' profiles has definitely increased. We know what Wilder did. Dominic Brazil, Ortiz too, things like that. And on the flip side with Fury, Otto Wallen, and I forgot the other guy's name. But other than that, he's just always on TV, things like that, and getting that exposure. So you would think that their numbers would be higher for this for the rematch. You would think that. That's what it suggests at this point, but remains to be seen.
Yeah, the thing about the whole part with the zone and that whole YouTube thing, like I said, I'm not really interested in all of that. They're trying to get it as a method to try to bring, people that are not necessarily interested in the sport of boxing, but know those guys outside of the boxing world. So it's almost like the whole thing with what they had, like the celebrity boxing type of thing that went down many years ago. But this time they're trying to actually pull this off and actually have it sanctioned or whatever it is. But that's kind of what we have in this day and age, is that you have a lot of those type of I wouldn't say boxing fans, but fans in general or followers that follow the person and not follow the sport. So they're trying to bring those that follow the person over to the zone in order to watch a particular event. It doesn't necessarily have to be like them committing to a year subscription, but maybe that month subscription in order to watch that particular event. And if they just get the money off that particular event and it brings good returns for them, then for them it's successful. So basically what you're saying is
that the zone is trying to grow their subscription base, not grow the sport of boxing.
They're trying to make money.
Trying to grow the sport of boxing.
Hey, if they have to do that from other methods, then they'll do that from other methods. But when it comes to this in particular, then they are trying to get money.
Why aren't they advertising on the Super Bowl?
What is there for them to advertise on the Super Bowl?
Advertise their stupid app.
What do they have coming up?
Advertise that stupid app.
Okay, now we're having folks bash the zone. You're gonna cost me any particular.
Advertise that app.
Come on, man.
These guys are not interested in growing the sport of boxing.
What they do is they only advertise events mainly. They don't advertise the app in general, because if you think about it, anything that you've seen on TV, has it really been for the DAZN app in general, or has it just been focused on a particular sport or a particular event or a particular fighter? It's mainly
I'm streaming all this shit illegally. I ain't fucking with them no more. Fuck DAZN. They're not trying to grow the sport.
Well, you just
They're
said
not.
That. Well, you just Is this the same person that said that they're streaming Wilder versus Fury 2?
I changed my mind. I'm buying the pay-per-view. You convinced me. I'm changing my mind, man. I gotta support Wilder, you know, because at the end of the day, I don't want to hear from people like you that Wilder didn't do well commercially. That's all it's going to be.
No, what I would have gotten on you about is how could the president of the Deontay Wilder fan club not buy a pay-per-view? That's what I would have gotten you on. So that's the thing there that I have in reference to this particular topic. And, you know, I wanted to touch on that there before. We basically pull off here on February 2nd. You, Matt, and Terrell for calling in for this particular episode. We'll, you know, get it on and cracking. Like I said, February 4th at 7 p.m., we're going to have WBC featherweight champion Gary Russell Jr. on the line to talk about his fight in Allentown, Pennsylvania against Tuksat Niyombayar and other things that we'll, you know, bring up in reference to all of that. So be sure to catch that. And you'll have, I think you have the sister show, the Cold Hard Truth on Sports, scheduled for 9:30 there. So I'm going to see how that works out. But like I say, at the end of every show, folks, the point of boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to send and trade. On that note, I'm out. Have a good evening.
Bomb squad, baby.